"Mr. Armand?" I asked the stout, shirt-sleeved man, who answered. "That's right, young man." He gave me a slow, placid smile.
"Do you keep birds?"
He drew himself up with dignity.
"I do. And I'm president of the Darabian Houlton Cage Bird Society."
"Fine," I said breathlessly. "Have you got a green budgie?"
"I've got canaries, budgies, parrots, parakeets, cockatoos. I just want a budgie." "Well, I've got albinos, blue-greens, barrids, latinos. I just want a green one."
A slightly pained expression flitted across the man's face as though he found my attitude of haste somewhat unseemly.
"Aye. Well, we'll go and have a look," he said.
I followed him as he paced unhurriedly through the house into the backyard, which was largely given over to a long shed containing a bewildering variety of birds. Mr. Armand gazed at them with gentle pride, and his mouth opened as though he was about to launch into a dissertation. Then he seemed to remember that he had an impatient chap to deal with and dragged himself back to the job in hand. "There's a nice little greenery here, but he's a bit older than t'others. Matter of fact, I've got him talking."
"All the better, just the thing. How much do you want for him?" "But, there's some nice ones along here. Just let me show you."
I put a hand on his arm. "I want that one. How much?" He pursed his lips in frustration, then shrugged his shoulders.
"10 bob.
"Right. Bung him in this cage." As I sped back up the road, I looked in the driving mirror and could see the poor man regarding me sadly from his doorway. Mrs. Dodds was waiting for me back at Jasmine Terrace.
"Do you think I'm doing the right thing?" I asked her in a whisper.
"I'm sure you are," she replied.
"Poor old thing, she hasn't much to think about, and I'm sure she'd fret over Peter."
That's what I thought. I made my way into the living room. Mrs. Tompkins smiled at me as I went in.
"Well, that wasn't a long job, Mr. Elliot."
"No," I said, hanging the cage with the new bird up in its place by the window. "I think you'll find all is well now." It was months before I had the courage to put my hand into a budgie's cage again. In fact, to this day I prefer it if the owners will lift the birds out for me. People look at me strangely when I ask them to do this. I believe they think I am scared the little thing might bite me. It was a long time, too, before I dared go back to Mrs. Tompkins. But I was driving down Jasmine Terrace one day, and on an impulse I stopped outside number 14. The old lady herself came to the door.
How is...
She peered at me closely for a moment and then laughed.
"Oh, I see who it is now. You mean Peter, don't you, Miss Erie? Oh, he's just grand. Come in and see him."
In the little room, the cage still hung by the window, and Peter, the second, took a quick look at me, then put on a little act for my benefit. He hopped around the bars of the cage, ran up and down his ladder, and rang his little bell a couple of times before returning to his perch. His mistress reached up, tapped the metal, and looked lovingly at him.
"You know, you wouldn't believe it," she said. "He's like a different bird."
I swallowed.
"Is that so? In what way?"
"Well, he's so active now, lively as can be. You know, he chatters to me all day long. It's wonderful what cutting a beat can do."
Chapter 33.
The name was on the garden gate, Lilac Cottage. I pulled out my list of visits and checked the entry again. Cook, Lilac Cottage, Marston Hall, bitch overdue for whelping. This was the place all right. Standing in the grounds of the hall, a 19th-century mansion house whose rounded turrets reared above the fringe of pine trees less than half a mile away. The door was opened by a heavy-featured dark woman of about 60 who regarded me unsmilingly.
"Good morning, Mrs. Cook," I said. "I've come to see your bitch."
She still didn't smile.
"Oh, very well. You'd better come in."
She led me into the small living room, and as a little Yorkshire terrier jumped down from an armchair, her manner changed.
"Come here, Cindy, me darling," she cooed. "This gentleman's come to make you better."
She bent down and stroked the little animal, her face radiant with affection. I sat down in another armchair.
"Well, what's the trouble, Mrs. Cook?"
"Oh, I'm worried to death." She clasped her hands anxiously.
"She should have had her pups yesterday, and there's nothing happening. I couldn't sleep all night. I'd die if anything happened to this dog."
I looked at the terrier, tail wagging, gazing up, bright eyes under his mistress's caress. She doesn't seem distressed at all. Has she shown any signs of labour?
What do you mean?
Well, has she been panting or uneasy in any way? Is there any discharge?
No, nothing like that.
I beckoned to Cindy and spoke to her, and she came timidly across the lino till I was able to lift her up onto my lap. I palpated the distended abdomen. There were a lot of pups in there, but everything appeared normal. I took her temperature. Normal again.
Bring me some warm water and soap, Mrs. Cook, will you please? I said.
The terrier was so small that I had to use my little finger, soaped and disinfected, to examine her. And as I felt carefully forward, the walls of the vagina were dry and clinging, and the cervix, when I reached it, tightly closed. I washed and dried my hands.
This little bitch isn't anywhere near whelping, Mrs. Cook.
Are you sure you haven't got your dates wrong?
No, I haven't. It was 63 days yesterday.
She paused in thought for a moment.
Now I'd better tell you this, young man. Cindy's had pups before, and she did self same thing, wouldn't get on with job. That was 2 years ago when I was living over in Listendale. I got Mr. Broomfield the vet to her, and he just gave her an injection. It was wonderful. She had the pups half an hour after it.
I smiled.
Yes, that would be pituitrin.
She must have been actually whelping when Mr. Broomfield saw her.
Well, whatever it was, young man, I wish you'd give her some now. I can't stand all this suspense.
I'm sorry. I lifted Cindy from my lap and stood up. I can't do that. It would be very harmful at this stage. She stared at me, and it struck me that that dark face could look very forbidding.
So you're not going to do anything at all?
Well, there are times when it is a soothing procedure to give a client something to do, even if it is unnecessary.
Yes, I've got some tablets in the car. They'll help to keep the little dog fit until she whelps. But I'd rather have that injection. It was just a little prick. It didn't take Mr. Broomfield more than a second to do.
I assure you, Mrs. Cook, it can't be done at the moment. I'll get the tablets from the car. Her mouth tightened. I could see she was grievously disappointed in me.
Oh, well, if you won't, you won't, so you better get them things.
She paused.
And me name isn't Cook.
It isn't?
No, it isn't, young man.
She didn't seem disposed to offer further information, so I left in some bewilderment. Out in the road, a few yards from my car, a farm man was trying to start a tractor. I called over to him.
Hey, the lady in there says her name isn't Cook.
She's right, I know. She's the cook over at the Hall.
You've gotten a bit mixed up.
He laughed, heartily. It all became suddenly clear. The entry in the day book, everything.
What's her right name, then?
Booby!
He shouted, just as the tractor roared into life. Funny name, I thought, as I produced my harmless vitamin tablets from the boot and returned to the cottage. Once inside, I did my best to put things right with plenty of yes, Mrs. Booby, and no, Mrs. Booby, but the lady didn't thaw. I told her not to worry, and that I was sure nothing would happen for several days, but I could tell I wasn't impressing her. I waved cheerfully as I went down the path.
Goodbye, Mrs. Booby, I cried. Don't hesitate to ring me if you're in doubt about anything.
She didn't appear to have heard.
Oh, I wish you'd do as I say, she wailed. It was just a little prick.